Good morning. I'm so glad that you are here listening to this recording of the summer Bible study that we're having here in Women of Grace. When we originally started planning this summer Bible study, we did not plan on recording it. So we actually didn't record it the week that we offered it, but I am now making a recording because we had enough people who asked to follow along with that. So if you are following along because you can't make it to the summer Bible study on Tuesday mornings, or if you just wanted to brush up, or you were traveling one of the weeks and you wanted to catch up, this is for you. We are excited that you're able to do this, and hopefully you'll find this beneficial. What I wanted to start this lesson with is talking about what we're actually doing this summer in Women of Grace. If you saw the Bible study listed in the bulletin, you know that it was just listed as a summer Bible study. If you heard me talk about it at the Moms Brunch or one of the Women of Grace events, you know that we are talking about the disciplines this summer, but that might not even tell you what we're talking about. It's not really a phrase that we use very often in the church these days, and you might be a little unsure of that. So I wanted to begin with a brief explanation about what we are doing this summer in Women of Grace. When we talk about the disciplines, we are talking about habits. And so we've actually titled this study, Holy Habits, Making Time for What Truly Matters. When we say the word discipline, we don't mean it in the sense of punishment, but in the sense of training. So it's the same as if you talk about somebody who is really disciplined in their workout routine or something like that. Here, we're talking about purposefully choosing to cultivate certain habits that can aid in our spiritual development and walk with God. Now, some examples may immediately come to mind, things like reading your Bible or studying it or setting aside time daily for prayer. And those are all examples of different spiritual disciplines. We're going to talk about more disciplines as the summer goes on. We're actually going to take one each of the 6 weeks that we're going to meet. We're going to talk about it. But the big picture of what we're doing is that we are talking about creating the discipline of making such things consistent and regular in our lives. We're going to purposely create habits or rhythms in our lives whereby we're serious about spiritual growth and that would aid in our spiritual growth. Now, one of the biggest objections that people often have to the concept of disciplines or habits like this, consistent habits, is that it sounds pretty legalistic. And after all, we go to Grace Bible Church. We believe in grace. We don't believe in legalism. We understand that life happens and we're not going to be sticklers for when life gets in the way of stuff like this. We recognize there's grace for that. And that's absolutely true. Of course we do those things. But the flip side is that sometimes we're so focused on grace that we don't push ourselves very hard. I'm not suggesting in any way that we can earn God's favor by reading our Bibles or by praying or by putting into practice any of the spiritual habits that we're going to talk about this summer. God's grace is given alone, on its own, and his favor is ours if we've trusted Jesus Christ for taking our sins. That's it. And a side note, if you're listening to this and you are not sure that you've ever trusted Jesus Christ for your salvation, please give us a call at the church. We really would love to talk to you about how you can do that and how you can put your faith in Christ. Here's the thing, though. It is possible for us to practice holy habits out of a legalistic mindset. We can do them with the idea that we're going to earn favor with God or that we're going to make him happy with us. But we can also practice them from a life that's overflowing with grace. See, the thing is, just because we make something a habit and we commit to doing it regularly and consistently doesn't make it lose its soul. It doesn't mean that we're doing it by rote, and it doesn't mean that we're becoming legalistic in doing that. One example of this that I find helpful is that when I had my son a few years back, one of the number one questions I was asked that first year is, are you making time for date night? Even our pediatrician asked that when we took him in for his first checkup. And it was, you know, like 2 weeks in, and we kind of were just dumbstruck and bleary-eyed as we were trying to figure out the having a baby thing. And it took me by surprise that that was the question. But why is that the question? It's because when a couple doesn't make time for one another, the relationship suffers. And if you've had a newborn in your house, you understand that if you don't make time for one another, you won't have time. you babies suck all of that time away from you, and you'll be bleary-eyed and looking at a semi-stranger across the table and wondering why you haven't had a real conversation in months. What's interesting is that almost universally, the advice people gave me was not, make sure to go on dates whenever you feel like it, or whenever you have the urge to, you know, you realize that you need to connect with your spouse, just make sure to do that when you feel like it. The advice we were given universally was schedule a date, even when you don't feel like it, even when it's hard, even when you just want to stay home, even when you can't think of how to get the babysitter to work out, go out with your spouse. Why is that? It's because when we spend time with people we love, we connect with them. Our relationships grow, they deepen, they flourish. And if we wait until we want to do some things, sometimes they never happen. So when something is important, you make it happen. You put it on the calendar, you make it a priority. Now, the same thing is true with friends as well. We all know this. As an introvert, there are many times that I'd rather be anywhere than out with people. I do that thing some of you may do where I make plans, and then when it comes time to go out, I don't feel like going. And if the other person calls to cancel, I secretly have a little party about getting to stay home. But what I found is that almost universally, when I make myself go out, I'm so glad I did, because I actually had a time to connect with people. And so I found that I can't wait till I feel like it or just go based off of my feelings. I have to schedule things that I know are important and beneficial. And it's not just about scheduling time. It's also about how much time we spend with someone. It's like any relationship. The more time you spend with a person, the more you have to say to that person. We've all experienced that thing where there may be somebody that we really love, and we really truly do. We truly value them, but we've fallen out of the routine of talking to them, and we haven't been in touch for a while. And so then you decide to have a phone call, and you're going to catch up. And, you know, it's interesting, because sometimes the people that we have the most to say to, we feel like we don't really have a whole lot to say to them. But then there are people that we see on a daily basis, and we find things to say to them over and over and over every single day. The more time we spend with a person, the deeper the relationship is, and oftentimes the more we have to talk about. We know that this is true in our human relationships, and it's equally true in our relationships with God. And yet we often fall into the trap of only making time for God when we feel like it, which, if we're being honest, means we don't make much time for God. And then we wonder why God feels distant, why we don't feel close to Him, or why our faith is weak. See, practicing habits is not legalistic unless we make it so. It's a matter of prioritization. We prioritize those things that are important to us. And because life always pushes us to do that which is easy, we find that we have to be intentional about prioritizing the things that are actually important, because oftentimes they are harder. So as we talk about disciplines or habits this summer, we're focusing on issues of prioritization, of putting our time with God on the calendar so we can make sure that it happens, of creating rhythms in our life so that our spiritual lives don't end up getting the leftovers after everything else is done. So that's the first thing I wanted to talk about. The second thing is that when we talk about disciplines or habits, we need to be specific about what we mean by that. Now, it's important to realize that there's not a list in the Bible of spiritual disciplines or habits that everyone needs to practice. There's no list saying that these are all the things that everyone must do. So when we're talking about different disciplines, what we're talking about is a series of practices that Christians have found useful over the course of history of the church. They're practices that are found in Scripture. They were practiced by Jesus or the apostles or their church leaders, and they've been found to be beneficial to thousands of Christians over the years. But since there isn't a specific list in the Bible, it's not as if any list that we could give you is exhaustive. So if you go and read a book on spiritual disciplines or look up one online, you're going to find there's a lot of variety. There's going to be a lot of differences between lists. This summer, We have 6 weeks, as you know, so we're going to be looking at 6 different practices. I tried to pick ones that were pretty universal in application and helpful on a broad scale. I also did not pick some intentionally. For example, Bible study is a very helpful habit, and that is disciplining ourselves to really dig into God's Word and study it for ourselves. Many of you are already doing that, and it's what we really focus on in our Bible studies and Women of Grace throughout the year. We have Bible studies that run from September through April, and we would really encourage you to join one of those if you haven't already. In particular, our Growing with Grace Bible study is really focused not only on learning about a specific book of the Bible, this year Genesis, but also learning how to study our Bibles better. So if you are not involved in that, I would urge you to look into joining us this fall as we go through the book of Genesis and really build your habit of studying the Bible in depth and intentionally. We'll spend a whole year working on that. One other note that I wanted to mention to you on the ideas of disciplines in general, and then we'll move on to the topic for today. Dallas Willard, who actually wrote a book on the spiritual disciplines, has helpfully divided the disciplines into 2 categories. And by that, he has divided them into the disciplines of abstinence and disciplines of engagement. And by this, he means something, a discipline of abstinence would be to abstain from something. And so it would be to give something up or to sacrifice something. And other times the discipline is to add something or to do something. So a discipline of abstinence would be such as fasting or giving up watching TV or going without something. That would be a discipline of abstinence. And a discipline of engagement would be something like going to Bible study with other believers or worshiping, where you're actually adding an action. So we're going to, over the course of the summer, talk about 3 in each category. So that we can see, because they really function together really well. Each week as we go through, we're going to teach on one of the disciplines, and then the homework is to go home and try it. There's going to be a homework sheet each week, but it's basically just a list of questions to prompt you to think through the experience of that week. So for example, our lesson today is on solitude, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but some of the questions are what things prevented you from being able to practice that? What are things that you can do to answer that? How did you feel when you were doing this? What are some things you've learned? So it's really going to be about processing that internally and figuring out a way to make this work well with your life. Because if it doesn't work well for your life, you're not going to do it. And so we really want you to do that. So we're going to come back the next week. We'll have some discussion time to talk about what worked well, what didn't work well, partially because if there was something that you really struggled with, I'll bet you there's somebody else in this room that's also struggled with that, and they may be able to share something with you. And if you found a breakthrough or a victory in something, there may be somebody else in that room that needs to hear that as well. And so we'll have a little bit of a time of sharing, and then we'll talk about the next one. One other note is it is summer, and we know that you'll be traveling. A lot of you will be only able to come to a few of these sessions. Don't worry about that at all. First of all, that is why we decided to do the recording, so you can find that online and catch up with that. But also, if you're not able to do it and you just come to participate in the next one, that's fine too. So please don't feel like you have to have made every single week in order to come. Please just come to all of the ones that you're able to. They'll kind of stand alone, so you'll have the ability to do that. Okay, so that was our introduction about the topic of these habits that we're going to be talking about this summer, but now we're going to go on to today's topic, which is to talk about solitude. And when we're talking about solitude, the phrase that I have to go with it is practicing being alone with God. Now, I have a question for you, and that is, I want you to think about the last time that you were actually alone. And I don't just mean physically alone, but mentally alone too. And then by that, I mean without voices speaking into your ears, without input from others, without noise to drown out the sound of your own mind. See, with the invention of the phone, we have created a world in which we never have to be alone. If you've got 5 minutes standing in line at the grocery store, what do? We pick up our phones and we check Instagram, text a friend, catch up on the news, look at our email. If you're taking a walk outside, you can listen to our favorite music or a podcast. If we're home alone one evening, you can browse Facebook, binge watch Netflix, and do some online shopping. Given the prominence of technology, we now live in a world where we can effectively eliminate silence and solitude. Now, when I say that, I know that I'm not saying that all technology is bad. Technology is amazing. It's incredible how we can be in contact with people that we couldn't before. As a mom at home with two littles, texting is an absolute lifeline at times to, you know, just to share about your day with somebody else who may also be trapped at home with some littles. Technology can certainly be used for good. Actually, I wrote much of this lesson while I was standing in line last week to get my driver's license renewed for 5.5 hours. And so I'm very thankful for that. But there's also some dangers that lurk in technology too, and we need to be very aware of that. Because our phones, TVs, radios, and computers are often all within an arm's reach, we have made it possible to go through life without ever having to be alone with our thoughts, even if we're physically alone. Not only is this impacting our creativity and our ability to problem solve, but it is scarily eliminating our inner dialogue. Moreover, for Christians, there is an even bigger issue. It's removing not only our time to meditate and think on the things of God, but it also limits the space in which we can be attuned to the voice of God, to comfort, to conviction, to encouragement. We fill our lives and our minds with so many words that we can crowd out the voice of God. This applies to whatever we fill our silence with. When we fill it with the things of the world, such as news or commercials or sports or shopping, when we do that, we're reinforcing to ourselves the values of this world. Now, not all of that is bad in and of themselves. Following sports, keeping up with the news, these aren't bad things. In fact, being informed is very good. But without proper balance from biblical truth, we can easily become people who just look the same as anyone else in the world. Now, for example, I thoroughly enjoy reading home renovation blogs and following accounts and magazines and all that kind of stuff. I find it fascinating. I love the process of making our house take on a certain image and just working in our house, working on projects. And I love reading things for inspiration. But I found that if I am not very, very careful, that enjoyment can quickly turn into something very negative. And by that I mean, it's very easy to, without the proper perspective, start comparing my life to others and looking at the things in my house as if they measure up as less. It's very easy for that to turn into discontent. And I found that I've had to limit Instagram accounts I follow. I've had to stop reading blogs. I've had to stop watching TV shows simply because I want to remember why I have my home. And it's not to look beautiful. It's not to show off to the world. It's so that I can use it to minister to others. And it's beautiful and wonderful and a blessing to be enjoyed, but I have to keep that right perspective in my mind. And so I have to have a balance in my mind, and I have to know where my weaknesses are. And so we have to limit certain voices that may tempt us or that may lead us down a path that we don't want to go down. But there's more to it than that, because even Christian influences can be detrimental to us. Let me explain. We can listen to Christian podcasts or sermons, listen to Christian music, read blogs that talk about God, and even those things can still distract us from God. Again, they're not bad, and it's wonderful that we have such a wealth of resources available to us. But because of that, we can easily fall into the trap of making our spiritual life all about listening to what other people have to say about God than experiencing our relationship with God ourselves. Again, it comes down to priorities. Christian authors and artists can point us to God and deepen our relationships with Him, or they can distract us from Him, and we can replace our relationship with a variety of other people's voices. The key is finding that tension. The key is saying, is this pushing me towards God, or is it crowding Him out? Utilizing resources, but also prioritizing time away from the other voices and time alone with God is what's important. Now, when we talk about solitude, this is not something that I'm just making up. This is something that Jesus did consistently, and we see this throughout Scripture. So in Matthew 14, verses 22 to 23, we see these words. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dispersed the crowds. And after he sent the crowds away, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. Now, what happened immediately prior to this? What happened was he had just fed the 5,000. Jesus had just done amazing ministry. He had just fed all of these people, and it was incredible. But right after that, you notice Jesus doesn't say, that was amazing ministry, let's go do some more. He tells his disciples to go away, get away from the crowds, have a time to rest, and then he goes alone. He goes away by himself, apart from even the disciples, to pray and to be alone. We also see this in Luke 5, 15 to 16. It says, but the news about him, Jesus, spread even more, and large crowds were gathering together to hear him and to be healed of their illnesses. Yet Jesus himself frequently withdrew to the wilderness and prayed. Now again, this is interesting because Jesus's popularity is growing and more people are wanting to come see him and be healed. And you would think, well, that's really good. It's really good when your ministry is growing. It's really good when you have all of this going on. Wouldn't you want to keep doing that? But no, Jesus prioritizes going away by himself into the wilderness to be with God and to pray. And so we see that as his popularity grows, he prioritizes aloneness as well. In Mark 6, 30 to 31, we see another pattern where Jesus teaches the disciples to do the same. In this passage, Jesus had just sent the disciples out to perform miracles and to preach, and they came back, and they were so excited because they had just seen God do all of these amazing things. And when they come back, Jesus takes them away so that they can rest and recuperate away from the crowds. And so Mark tells us in Mark 6, 30 to 31, then the disciples gathered around Jesus and told him everything they had done and taught. And he said to them, come with me privately to an isolated place and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and there was no time to eat. And so Jesus tells his disciples, you need rest and you need food. So come away, come by yourself. Let's go to a place that it has solitude where you can rest and you can eat. And that's what they need after their time of ministry. Luke 6 tells us of a time when Jesus went out by himself alone, and he spent all night praying. It says in Luke 6, 12, now it was during this time that Jesus went out to the mountain to pray, and he spent all night in prayer to God. Now, what happens right after this, that this is mentioned here? It's right before he chooses the disciples. So before he's about to make this huge decision of who these people are going to be, who are going to follow him, who will end up being the apostles that start the church, he spends the whole night in prayer with God by himself. And so we see Jesus following, again, that pattern of solitude. We see this also in Mark 1:35. It says, Jesus got up early in the morning when it was still very dark, departed, and went out to a deserted place, and there he spent time in prayer. Once again, here at the beginning of his ministry, we see Jesus alone praying in the wilderness. Do you see this pattern here? Jesus goes out to the wilderness to be alone for a variety of reasons. He goes to rest and recuperate from ministry. He teaches his disciples to do the same, to rest, to eat, to be alone after ministry. But he also goes away so that he can pray and be equipped for further ministry. And so Jesus uses this time very strategically. Now, Jesus wasn't the only person who practiced solitude. It's been a marker of monastic life since the beginning of the movement. And by monastic, I'm talking about monks, right? People who withdraw from society to be alone. This was something that was a marker of all monks and nuns for a very long time, with it they would withdraw from society and to go live alone. Now, a few years ago, I had the privilege of getting to go on an expedition with my husband's organization, and we were digitizing manuscripts in Greece. And one of the weekends, we got to take a trip up to Central Greece on our own time over the weekend. And one of the things we did up in Central Greece, which is very mountainous country, is we visited some incredible monasteries in a place called Meteora. There are these incredible monasteries that are built on top of these limestone formations that just jut straight out of the ground hundreds and hundreds of feet into the air. And so they're perched on top of these rocks that just shoot out of the ground. And so there's no way to get to them. And they're right there on top. Now, today, they have now built ramps so that you can get up to the top of these rock formations to visit the monasteries. But in the past, they weren't there. Today, there are a handful of monasteries, and there's also a nunnery at Meteora. And back in the day, the only way to go visit the monasteries was to climb into a basket. It's more like a net of ropes, kind of like a fish net, so to speak. And so they had created this net of ropes, and you would sit in it, kind of like a sling, and then they would pull you up the cliff as you dangled in this basket. Now, it's interesting because these monks took very seriously the concept of solitude, to the point that this was the only way to access the monasteries. It was of utmost priority for them to be able to block out the noise of the world back in the 14th and 15th centuries. It's intriguing to me because a lot of times we look at the noisiness of our day and we think, oh, if we just went back, you know, X amount of years, it was a lot quieter back then. But even back in the 14th and 15th centuries, there were these people who thought, you know, the only way to focus on my spiritual life is to get away from the noise of the world. So much so that they went to live on top of these rock formations. Now, the question that we have next is, how do we practice solitude and being alone with God? I'm not suggesting that everyone needs to become a nun. I'm not saying we should all go live in monasteries, or even that we should only engage with like-minded believers. In fact, a life that's too focused on solitude can easily lead to an alternate problem, where solitude is so prioritized that we can neglect the duty that we have to be in the world, not of it. Now, a side note here that I think is important. We tend to prioritize one of those aspects, either being in the world or of the world. We tend to prioritize one of those aspects to the neglect of the other. We either are so concerned to be in the world, as in approachable, humble, loving, gracious, that we forget that we're not to be of the world. And to not be of the world means we're different, that there's a holiness, there's a set-apartness, there is a difference in our lives. And we can often be so concerned to be in the world and approachable that we forget to not be of the world, as in holy. Or we can be on the other side of the issue where we are so concerned that we're not of the world that we forget to be in the world. And I think we tend to fall in on one side of that or not, that we're either more concerned with being holy and we forget to be kind and gracious and approachable and surrounded by unbelievers, or we're so concerned to be open and engage with unbelievers that we forget that we're supposed to be different. I think that's why those two are paired, because God knew that our tendency would be to pick one and not the other. And that's why those ideas are paired, because that is our calling, to be in the world, to be living among people and to be approachable and kind, but also to be different and to stand out. Now, back to our topic, though. We need both parts of this. We need solitude. We need time alone. We need time when there are no competing voices. But we cannot make that the only thing that we do. If we do, we're ineffectual for the kingdom. We need to engage. We need to minister to others. We need to proclaim the gospel. And I'm not just talking about people who work in the church. We are all called to be ministers of the gospel in the lives that God has given us. But again, we can't make that the only thing. If we try to minister and serve others without prioritizing time alone with God, we'll burn out and become exhausted. And so we need both. We need time alone with God, and we need time to minister to others. We need both of those. Now, one of the questions is, how do we do this? How do we practice solitude, especially in our world? Now, the concept of practicing solitude is not necessarily a difficult one. We understand solitude means being alone. That's pretty simple. But implementing that practice is not always easy. Even if it weren't for culture pushing back against us on every front, because culture abhors solitude in many ways, we're all very busy people. So even if it weren't for that pushing back against us, we would have internal pressure pushing back on this concept. We have too much to do most days. And if you're anything like me, a moment of quiet can make you feel guilty. You think of all the things you should be doing in that moment alone. So because it is so difficult to do this, we need to work strategically to create room for solitude in our lives. One thing that I've done recently that has been really successful in bringing solitude into my life is that I've incorporated solitude into my walks. I love to walk around my neighborhood. We have some beautiful trails that aren't too far from my front door. And as somebody who grew up in Northeast Ohio, I love trees. And so I love walking through this wooded path in my neighborhood. And what I've been doing usually is that I'll listen to music or audiobooks or a podcast while I walk. And it's been very enjoyable. Recently, however, I've started taking my walks in solitude. I carry my phone with me just in case I need it, but I don't listen to anything. I actually just walk quietly. And over Easter weekend, when I was walking in silence, I saw something incredible as I walked down the path. As I was walking along, it was right after, if you remember, Easter weekend. We had a lot of rain that weekend. And so I was walking on Easter Saturday, the Saturday right before Easter. And as I walked along, I realized that the path in front of me completely disappeared. It was completely covered over in water, and I couldn't even see where the path started again on the other side. It was as if a lake had just eaten up the path. And as I was standing there looking at this and wondering what to do, there were a couple of ducks swam by, and they just swam over the path as if this had been the way it always was, and there wasn't even a path there. And so I was struck by this, and first of all, how beautiful it was with the sun shining and reflecting on the water, and the way the road just disappeared, the way the ducks were swimming there. And then I was sitting there trying to figure out what to do, and I had to abruptly stop and change my plans because I was pretty sure the water was deep enough I couldn't walk through it without getting my shoes soaking. And as I stood there considering this picture and thinking about what to do, it reminded me of Silent Saturday, which is the name that was given to the Saturday between Good Friday and Easter Sunday. And I realized that was the day for the disciples when everything started to sink in, right? They had just seen their leader, their master, brutally executed in front of them. All of their hopes and dreams for the future were shattered. Everything that they had planned, everything they thought was going to happen, is now came to a screeching halt, and they have no idea where to go. It was, in many senses, to them, the end of the road. They reached a point, and they didn't know how to go forward. And that Saturday, as they sat contemplating, was very different than Silent Saturday for us, because we know what's coming. We know Easter is right around the corner. We know that hope came with the dawn of Easter morning. But the disciples didn't know that. All they knew is that they couldn't go forward and they didn't know what to do. And so as I stood there at the end of my road, I was struck by this feeling of a little taste of what the disciples must have felt, not knowing the story, being trapped and feeling utter devastation. Now, what was remarkable to me is that had I been listening to something, had I been even a podcast, even a sermon, I would have missed that picture. I would not have seen what God had for me to see there. And honestly, I would probably just have been really annoyed that I had to turn around because I wasn't going to get to do the whole loop. It wasn't the right mileage. It wasn't what I wanted to be doing. But instead, because I was silent, I got to see that beautiful picture, the beauty of the scene, but also the symbolism. And I got to have that experience and recognize more deeply what the disciples experienced. And it turned into a moment of worship for me as I recognized the significance of Silent Saturday, but also how amazing it is that we have the hope, that we know the end of the story, that we know this isn't the end of the road. And so I was able to worship because of that. But again, had I been listening to something, I would have missed that moment. So as you think through it this week, I would like to encourage you to find ways, like I did with walking, to incorporate solitude into your schedule. Now, I don't mean that you just naturally have pockets of time whereby you're not doing anything, and those are the times you should pick for solitude. If you're like most of us, every moment of your life could be dedicated to something. And so we have to fight back against that urge. We have to pick a time and say, this is a priority, and I'm going to carve out the time for this. So when I say that it fits into your schedule, I don't mean that you just naturally had an opening that you can fill with solitude, but rather that you find a time that works well to incorporate solitude into your schedule. So here's a couple tips that may help you do this. First of all, as we're being strategic about this, I would encourage you to pair your habit. And by that, I mean to incorporate your habit into something you're already doing. For example, this would be like me taking my walks, which I was already doing, and turning them into a time of silence. So I'm taking something that I've already made time for in my schedule, and then I'm turning that into a time when I can also make it an experience of solitude. Do you see how that works? It could also be the times that you're driving to pick your kids up from summer camp. And you could take that drive, not the drive on the way back with your kids, but the drive to camp to pick up the kids. That could be a time of solitude for you. Or you could say when you make your first cup of coffee in the morning, instead of answering emails while you drink it, you could say, I'm going to take this time that it takes me to drink my cup of coffee or the next 10 minutes or whatever, and I'm going to use that to enjoy solitude. You're already doing the cup of coffee. And so when you start making that cup of coffee, it can be that trigger to remind you, this is the time I'm going to take for that solitude. So you want to, it's really helpful to incorporate your habit into something you're already doing. It not only serves to trigger your memory that you're going to do it at this time, but it gives you that time in your day when you can make that happen. So that's strategy number one. The second is to pick a time and a place. And so I would say put it on the calendar or it's not going to happen. This is like date night. If you don't schedule a date night, it's not real. It won't happen. Life will always interrupt. And so for this, I say, figure out what kind of a person you are. Some of you love getting up early, and so you should find time early in the morning for your solitude. Some people that works really, really well for. You're already an early bird, and so maybe you wake up a few minutes earlier, or you just shuffle some things in your schedule. You don't check your email until later, but you can incorporate some solitude into your early morning. Some of you hate getting up early, but you've been convicted that you need to get up early anyway, because if you don't, the kids are up, and if you don't have time with God first, your attitude is terrible. Maybe that resonates with you. Maybe it's just me. But so that may be true for you. And you may be thinking, you know what, I really do need to make that a priority. And so if that's you, then that's great. But on the other side, if you are not a morning person, don't feel obligated to become a morning person in order to practice solitude. There's absolutely no reason for you to do that. You need to think through what works for you. And for some of you, the last 10 minutes before you go to bed may be your time of solitude. Or maybe once the kids are tucked into bed, that's the time for you to incorporate solitude into your life. And so the reality is, it doesn't really matter as much when you do this, but that you find a time that you can do this. So be strategic about it. Think of a time when it realistically can happen that you can spend some time in solitude. And then once you've thought through that and come up with a plan, then put it on the schedule so that you can make sure that it happens. Set a reminder if you need. If you need to, make your phone shut off basically and go into nighttime mode at a certain time, if you need to make that happen earlier as a trigger to remind yourself to do this, that's a really helpful thing to do. Some phones you can actually even set that they just shut down all the apps from at a certain time period. And so you can do that as a trigger to remind yourself of, oh yeah, this is this is my time of solitude, and I'm not going to be looking at social media or checking my email or doing work on my phone during this time. So pick a time, prioritize it, and get it on the schedule, or else it's not going to happen. And we aren't going to just make time for something like that unless we're intentional about it. So the third strategy is to make it easy. And I explain this by saying edit your environment to remove obstacles. Now, what we mean by that is, so if you've decided that you want to take the first 10 minutes of your day to sit on your back porch with your cup of coffee and spend some time alone with God, you need to make sure the day before that the chair on your back porch is not covered with kids' toys, or that there's an anthill in the corner of it, or that you're out of coffee, or whatever it is. So look at what you're doing and remove the obstacles that could get in the way, things that would be an issue. If you've decided that you want to get up in the morning and go for a walk, set your tennis shoes out ahead the night before so that when you get up, you don't have to go searching. So remove the obstacles that would make it hard for you to follow through on the commitment. If you've decided that you want to spend time in your car, taking the time driving to spend in solitude with God, but your habit is every time you get in the car, you plug in your phone and you turn on a podcast, it might be helpful to unplug your charger in your car so that when you get in the car, your routine is broken and it reminds you, oh, no, I'm taking this time for silence. And so, again, look at your environment, figure out what are the things that are going to keep you from practicing solitude, and work to fix some of those issues and remove some things and just try to eliminate those obstacles. The fourth strategy is to start small. Pick something achievable. Solitude can be incredibly off-putting. We are not used to being alone with our thoughts, and we can easily get overwhelmed by thinking of all the things we should be doing instead of spending time alone. So if you need to start with 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes, do that. Start with something that is actually achievable. The goal is obviously to work beyond and to find as much time for solitude as we need. But when we're starting, we need to be realistic. Don't let the ideal be the enemy of the good. So don't sit here and think, well, if I don't get up at 5 in the morning and spend an hour alone, I'm failing at this. Absolutely not. 10 minutes spent in solitude is better than none. And as you go through the weeks, you may actually find, too, things that are working and not working. So at the beginning of the week, you may think, oh, this is the time I'm going to be able to do it. And then you don't. And you're not going to be able to achieve it. Well, as you do that, instead of beating yourself up over it, ask yourself, well, why didn't I achieve that? Why was I not able to do that which I had desired to do? And then learn from that and come up with a new strategy for the next day. And so this is something you're going to continue to refine. You're going to continue to work on as you move forward. So make sure to be gentle and kind with yourself as you move forward. And celebrate the little victories. Celebrate the fact that you may have spent 10 minutes alone in quiet with God that week. And celebrate that fact. It's more than you spent the week before that. So as you go through this week, the homework we can send out to you, and you can go through looking at some questions to help you figure out what you're doing, to help you just think through what works well for you. But the whole practice this week, and what I would urge you to do, is to just spend some time alone with God during this week. It can take a variety of viewpoints. If you find it beneficial to start by reading a passage of scripture, maybe just a verse or two, and then just sit quietly with that scripture, you can absolutely do that. I would say don't get bogged down in trying to do a Bible study, because that's not the point. The point is to actually have some quiet time and to spend time alone with God. If it works well to just sit in a chair and have this is your special chair and time to just be, then I would encourage you to do that. There's a lot of different ways that we can incorporate solitude into our lives, but one of the main points is to just eliminate all those other voices. So we're trying to quiet those voices. One of the questions that was asked at Bible study last week was, what do you do when your mind starts going a million different ways and you start thinking through the, you know, the grocery shopping you have to do and all of that? And what I've done and that I found helpful is I just let my mind do that, because after probably about 10 minutes of doing that and not writing it down, I get kind of bored thinking about it, because usually when my mind starts going on those things, I think, oh, I got to write that down and I got to send that email and I got to do this. Well, if I'm not letting myself do all of those things, I kind of stop thinking about it. And then I'm able to move on. But if you're sitting there the whole time thinking, don't think about grocery shopping, don't think about grocery shopping, well, that's the only thing you're going to think about. So give yourself grace to do that. And if that's still a struggle, let's talk about it next time you come in. But I just encourage you to take the time this next week to practice that solitude, to think through what it would look like in your life and what you can do in order to incorporate that. And I look forward to hearing what you've learned. I hope some of you can join us next week as we kick back into this Bible study and as we start looking back into that. So that'll be June 25th. We will be back together, and I hope some of you can join us. If not, send Cindy or me an email, and we'd be happy to chat with you and talk about what God's doing in your life. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks for listening.